Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, acclaimed Irish-American writers Alice McDermott, Joseph O'Neill, and Irish Ambassador to the United States Daniel Mulhall discuss their work, their approach to writing, and their shared Irish heritage. This program originally took place October 29th, 2020, and was recorded live over Zoom. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
I'm Kerry Cranston. I'm the president of the American Writers Museum. We're grateful to all of you for being here and for valuing the past, present, and future of American writing. This program is the latest in the Gene and John Rowe program series, My America, Immigrant and Refugee Writers Today, offered in conjunction with our ongoing exhibit of the same name, where I'm actually seated tonight. Tonight, we're honored to be joined by Daniel Mulhall, the Irish ambassador to the United States, and two of America's best known and most loved Irish-American writers, Joseph O'Neill and Alice McDermott. I want to say welcome to our very special guests, and I'm now going to hand it over to Sarah Keating from the consulate office here in Chicago. So Sarah, if you want to introduce our very special guest tonight, thank you.
Thank you, Kerry. Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us here this evening. As mentioned, my name is Sarah Keating, and I'm the vice consul at the Irish consulate here in Chicago. The consulate is delighted to have the opportunity to partner with the American Writers Museum as part of their My America exhibit to present tonight's wonderful panel. A special thank you to Malcolm, Kerry, and Allison for their help in making tonight's event possible. The museum is a wonderful resource right here on our doorstep in Chicago and now available to people further afield through their online offerings. I've been lucky enough to have the opportunity to visit the museum on a number of occasions. The My America exhibit aims to explore the story of immigrant and refugee writers in America today. The Irish diaspora throughout the world, but nowhere more so than here in the US, have played a pivotal role in sharing Irish culture with the world. We are very fortunate to have such a highly skilled and talented diaspora, including our speakers here tonight, who I have the honor of introducing to you. Alice McDermott's eighth novel, The Ninth Hour, was published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux in September 2017. Her seventh novel, Someone, published in 2013, was a New York Times bestseller, a finalist for the Dublin IMPAC Award, the National Book Critics Circle Award, the Patterson Prize for Fiction, and the Dayton Literary Peace Prize. Her stories, essays, and reviews have appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the New Yorker, Harper's, and elsewhere. She is the Richard A. Maxey Professor of Humanities at Johns Hopkins University. Joseph O'Neill is the author of the novels The Dog, Netherland, The Breezes, and This Is the Life. Netherland has won the Penn Faulkner Award for Fiction and the Kerry Group Irish Fiction Award. He has also written a family history, Blood Dark Track. He lives in New York City and teaches at Bard College. Daniel Mulhall is an Irish diplomat who is the current ambassador of Ireland to the United States since August 2017. He has also been Ireland's ambassador to the United Kingdom, Germany, and Malaysia. Ambassador Mulhall maintains a keen interest in Irish history, poetry, and literature. I'll now hand over to Ambassador Mulhall to get us started on tonight's program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for that introduction, and thank you to all who've joined us this evening. I want to say that I'm delighted to be associated with the American Writers Museum. I had the privilege of visiting the museum on two occasions, most recently last year, and saw the exhibition on writers who have settled in America from different parts of the world, including an exhibit on Joseph O'Neill and his background and his work in America. And I want to also recognize and pay tribute to my good friend Malcolm O'Hagan, whose brainchild the museum was. And I don't know if Malcolm's on the call this evening, but if he is, well done, Malcolm. It's a great thing you did, and it's a big legacy for you. And also want to thank my colleagues from the Consulate General in Chicago, represented here this evening by Sarah Keating, for the work they've done in connecting with the American Writers Museum. Now, I know Alice McDermott very well from Washington, D.C., and she's a regular visitor to the embassy. She's spoken at the embassy on a number of occasions, and it's great to be connected with her again, albeit virtually, but we'll get together fairly soon again, Alice, I promise. We haven't seen one another for too long at this stage because of this pandemic that we're now working our way through. Joseph O'Neill, I haven't met, but I'm actually, except for this evening on this virtual platform, but I'm actually currently reading his novel, Netherland, and I'm enjoying it immensely, I have to say. It's a fantastic novel. I can't understand how I didn't how I didn't read it before, but I didn't. But I'm enjoying reading it now, and it's a great novel for any reader at any time of year. But it's a fantastic piece of work, and I'm really delighted to be sharing this virtual platform with Alice and Joseph this evening. So I suppose one of my I'm a big enthusiast for Irish literature and history, and one of my questions to myself and to others is, you know, does the idea of an Irish writer have any meaning today? Is there still a sense that you can be an Irish writer, or is that too confining a definition? And likewise, is there such thing as an Irish American writer, or is this just a kind of a convenient tag that we put on people like Alice, who happen to have an Irish American background? So, I mean, just briefly looking at the whole idea of an Irish writer. Well, Shaw was Irish, but George Bernard Shaw was Irish. But aside from one of his plays, you might struggle to find Irish themes in Shaw's work. Wilde, although he had his strongly nationalist views, inherited from his mother, who was a poet in the nationalist tradition in the 1840s and was a very influential figure at that time. Really, Wilde didn't publish anything that could be construed to have an Irish subject matter, at least not that I'm aware of. James Joyce wrote almost exclusively about Ireland, but he did so during a life spent mainly outside of Ireland. So he was kind of, in a way, half disconnected from Ireland, but nonetheless writing very incisively about our country. Yeats was, of course, immersed in Irish affairs throughout his life, but he had a complicated relationship with the Ireland of his time. So it wasn't as if he didn't live in Ireland for all that long. He moved there in the 1920s and spent maybe a decade in Ireland. But apart from that, most of his life was spent back and forth between Dublin and London and elsewhere. And then towards the end of his life in France. And then, of course, Samuel Beckett spent most of his life in France. And his famous plays, while they may have an Irish spirit running through them, many people say they do, and I tend to agree with that, they're set in some undefinable geographical realm, some realm that's not really ever defined. So again, a very different kind of Irish writer. And then, of course, of our great writers, I would say that Seamus Heaney, our most recent Nobel Prize winner, is probably the most quintessentially Irish writer we have. And then, of course, if you look at our contemporary writers, well, Colin McCann, just to give one example, lives in New York, and his latest novel has as a theme the events in the Middle East. So again, you know, you have writers who are based outside of Ireland and writing on themes that don't have a direct Irish setting. So that brings me to Joseph O'Neill, a convenient segue into a question for Joseph. Joseph, what adjective, if any, would you put before the word novelist or writer or author to describe yourself?
I'm not sure it would be an adjective that that refers to my nationality. I'm actually very interested in the point you raise, which is, you know, is it coherent to talk about, you know, American writers and Irish writers and French writers and so on? And I think it is coherent, but I'm a very weird case. I'm born in Ireland, and but my mother's Turkish, and I grew up in Europe, and now I worked in England for a long time, and now I'm in the United States, and I'm a US citizen, and kind of very interested in being a US citizen. But you know, it is true that you know, if you want to categorize people by nationality, that it is true that I grew up believing myself to be Irish, reading Irish literature, and weirdly enough, American literature, and almost to the exclusion of writing from other countries. I'm stumped on the adjective, but you know, I suppose I'm one of those writers who is, I am Irish, but not in the sense of being preoccupied with the depiction of Irish, of the experience of people living on the island.
Yeah, that's a good answer. There was a time when Irish writers, in a way, had to be preoccupied with the events on the island, because the events were so troubled and compelling. For example, if you look at Joyce and Yeats, they both lived through a time when Ireland was undergoing a political transformation. Seamus Heaney came of age when, you know, the Northern Ireland Troubles were picking up speed, and, you know, for the most of the rest of his life, he had to, you know, at least deal with that issue, although it wasn't the only theme, of course, that he covered. But Alice, can I ask you, you're a writer who has focused in your work on aspects of the experience of Irish America. I've been reading recently Charming Billy, and you know, I can see how deeply rooted it is in the whole kind of Irish American experience. So do you think, was it an inevitable direction for you when you sat down to write? When you sat down to write your first novel, or, you know, that novel, say Charming Billy, was it kind of inevitable that you would draw on a part of life, a slice of life that you knew about from your own background and upbringing?
Yeah, thank you. You know, I think I agree with Joe, and I think probably most of us who write novels balk a little bit at any kind of adjective before novelist. We're novelists, we're writers. And I think especially starting out, I saw Irish America as material at hand, not anything that I was out to explore. I think as a young writer, I really wanted to be a Southern writer. And when I wasn't sure I could be that, I really wanted to be a Russian writer. And I just sort of stumbled on becoming an Irish American writer because it was material at hand. It was not what I was out to explore. I was out to explore the big themes. Mortality, what's the meaning of life? What is the drama that constitutes family life? But I had all these details, and I knew enough about the Irish American community in New York that I could grab them. I didn't have to stop writing sentences to go do research about other cultures. But I have to say, having been at this a while now, what I've begun to realize is that impulse to say, it's not just my experience, it's not just the Irish American experience or the Southern experience or the Russian experience or the South American experience, it's the experience of being human, is a very Irish thing to do. And to say, I'm interested in our mortality, and I'm interested in the drama that is family life, is kind of Irish. So in some ways, I've come full circle, choosing Irish America as my subject with complete disdain for Irish America. It's the last thing I was interested in. I was just interested in the characters themselves, and I needed to put them somewhere, and I needed to give them names. But now I've found, looking at my own work, that my concerns seem to be particularly Irish. You know, lots of death and lots of things going unsaid. Lots of grudges and lots of stories. Lots of characters who are enchanted by narratives, either their own or each other's. So in some ways, my DNA has caught up with my own view of myself as a literary figure.
And I mean, what brought you to the point where you found yourself being a writer? I mean, was there a moment or was there some influence in your family that pushed you in that direction? Was it, for example, the storytelling that you heard? Because I remember growing up in Waterford, you know, the 50s and 60s, and when family gatherings took place, stories were told. People did tell stories. There wasn't much drinking, actually, very little of that. But there was a lot of storytelling, and there were a number of people in the family who could tell very good stories. And that kind of has been lost a bit. My family, we tend to sing a bit when we meet and we have a few beers and so forth, but we don't really tell stories anymore. Was there something in your background that led you down that pathway towards being a writer?
Well, I think it is that storytelling, yeah. And I never saw that as a particularly Irish or Irish-American thing. I thought this is what families do when they get together. And I have to say, within my own family, nobody was a particularly good storyteller. The stories were mostly pointless and often went on and on and on. But we all listened politely, and one was exchanged for the other. And I always thought that's just what human beings do. And again, sort of being reintroduced with contemporary Ireland. My grandparents were born in Ireland. I didn't know my grandparents. You know, I was raised second generation New York. Everybody had grandparents who were born somewhere else. But to be reintroduced to through events at the embassy, for instance, to contemporary Ireland and see, oh my God, yeah, that's what we do. We tell stories. We are a narrative people.
Joseph, you traveled around quite a bit. You lived in different countries. You could have obviously settled in any country of your choice. So what made you decide to settle in America? And do you think that has shaped your writing, or did you come here in order to shape your writing using that great country, the great country that is America, and the massive diversity and variety that exists here? Was that part of the reason why you decided to settle in New York?
No, it wasn't. When I came here, I was actually a lawyer. And I mean, I'd written some books, but I thought I was coming here for a couple of years. But like a lot of people who come to New York, they stay, and I did. And then suddenly there were lots of children, and you know, you just like, you're too busy to think about moving anywhere, and then boom, 20 years have gone by, and then you have a U.S. passport, and you're shouting to people about the election in this country rather than one in another country, and then I guess you're at that point it's too late. Something kind of fateful has happened, but as it happens. I now can recognize that moving here actually gave me a subject, which was New York, and also a kind of platform, a space for my imagination, having been one of these children who was permanently an expat, I was deprived of the kind of cultural kind of materials that Alice has been mining like a doggedly all her life. You know, I had no recognizable cultural, you know, the life of the expat in The Hague is not something I could found a series of brilliant novels on. And I just want to emphasize about Alice, by the way, that she really is not joking when she says she's writing about death. If you're interested in the subject of death, she is your novelist. You kill everyone, and then not just kill them, but just erase them from the book and then move on to someone else. It's terrifying. Whether that's Irish or not, I don't know. Maybe it's not. But I have found a kind of this bizarre identity, and I think it has to do with New York, to be honest. I'm not so sure it has to do with a kind of wider identity than that. I feel very, you know, I have my issues with New York, like everybody who lives here. But on the other hand, I am sort of the place. And as I mentioned in that book you're currently reading, Netherland, once you've lived in New York, it sort of interposes itself between your other origins. Once you've been in New York for a number of years, you sort of feel like a New Yorker. And even if you leave, you sort of always feel like you've left New York. Whereas that isn't necessarily the case, as I can say from personal experience, from having lived in London for 10 years, I don't feel like I was a Londoner who's left London. I don't have that feeling at all.
Yeah. So I came across one wonderful passage in Netherland. I think it's on page 96. I meant to have the book in front of me, but I don't have it. It's in another room, so I'm not going to go on together because I'll vacate the screen, and that would be bad, probably bad practice for a moderator. But there was one passage, and I said, was that written today or something? And I looked at the novel. I discovered the novel was written many, you know, quite a few years ago. But you seem to have kind of captured something of New York. I suppose it's kind of New York post 9/11, I guess, isn't it? It's that kind of world that you've captured. But. A lot of the characters in the novel are actually immigrants, right? I mean, the two main characters are immigrants. They're not typical immigrants. Maybe, you know, there's the Dutch guy, and there's the guy from the Caribbean. But then there are all the cricketers, who tend to be as well people from diverse backgrounds. So, I mean, what was the inspiration for Netherland? I mean, when did the idea come to you? This, you know, on the face of it, bizarre idea of writing about cricket in New York among immigrants.
It is a very bizarre idea, but as I'm just going to echo Alice, you know, when you're writing, you just grab whatever's to hand. and you're sort of stuck with your materials. And I was weirdly, it wasn't some enormous kind of, you know, artistic kind of conclusion I arrived at to write about cricket in New York. I wrote about it because I played cricket in New York for years. Yeah. And I felt after a number of years, it was only after a number of years of doing it, that I sort of thought there might be something to write about. And I began to write about it. And then 9/11 happened as I was working on the book, and it became sort of compulsory, again, artistically compulsory, not because I had some sort of enormous thematic project in mind. It just became that the book would make no sense unless I somehow reckoned with that change in the city. And so that became a very important element of the book as well. And then it's fortuitous and idiosyncratic. And I had it, obviously, as you rightly point out, it makes no sense at all to write a novel about cricket in New York. No one is ridiculous. I mean, no. And
it's great. It worked out well.
I got lucky, you know, as you know, as we know, luck has a lot of literary, you know, your literary reception depends to a significant degree on having a bit of luck.
Alice, can I turn to you for a moment? A few years ago, when I was ambassador in London, Edna O'Brien, the great Irish novelist, came to me and said, "Dan, I want to go to Nigeria." And I said, "Why?" She said, "I want to write a book about the Boko Haram girls." And I said, "Well, I said, look, really, Edna, could you not choose a place which would be more convenient, the Caribbean or somewhere?" She said, "No, I want to go to Nigeria. I want to go and meet the Boko Haram girls. I want to go into the jungle in Lagos." Now, I was able to get a visa for her from the Nigerian embassy, and I was able to arrange for our embassy to look after her and take her around and you know, take her into the jungle or some version of the jungle. I don't know what it was. And she did a little talk for them as well. So it all worked out very well in the end. And she made two visits to Nigeria and to write about, you know, something that was really quite foreign from anything she'd written before. Could you imagine yourself writing a novel that was set somewhere, you know, I mean, I'm not saying Nigeria, but somewhere kind of not in America, maybe a long way away from America, a place you didn't really know very well, and you were able to go to a few times, maybe for research purposes, like you know, like was done in the case of a girl.
I imagine that when Edna O'Brien asked for you to do something for her, you do it.
Absolutely, I had no doubt about it. I was destined to do it.
I can't imagine refusing her anywhere. She wanted to go to the moon. You would have gotten
her visa for it. It took about 3 months to get the visa. And my colleague was staring her hair at the end. But anyway, she was pleased in the end that she got the visa for her. But yeah, it was imperative. There was, you know, there was no saying no to it.
There would be no stopping it. No, Brian. Yes, yeah, and it's a beautiful book. It's a wonderful book. I do imagine myself, as a matter of fact, I'm elbows deep in a novel that has a, I can't say it yet because it's not finished, but it has a very, very foreign setting for a good half of it. And I don't even have to go there because COVID came along. And so now I only go there in my imagination. I don't have to trouble anyone for a visa. But I think, you know, thinking about Edna's book, despite the setting and despite the subject, it's very much an Edna O'Brien book. Yeah. And the concerns of it are the same concerns that you would find in Country Girls. And the language and the vividness of the descriptions and the beautiful sentences are almost doesn't matter what the subject is or what the setting is. And I sometimes worry that we often read fiction with too much about you know what it, instead of looking at what it's saying, we look at the subject, we look at the setting. And it seems to me that most of us are using subject and setting and plot and story and even the particulars of a character to some other end. I think we're all trying to say something that all of us will recognize as somewhat authentic or true about what it is to be human, to be mortal, to be alive for any length of time in any time or place. Although I have to say, when I first read Netherland, when it came out, I was delighted by the depiction of New York. And very early on in the novel, I think when the still in London, when there's the warning that if you spend any time in New York, you can't leave it. And for me, that defined my immigrant grandparents and first generation parents' experience, because it was always they came from Ireland, but the best place to be is New York. They didn't have a lot of great things to say about where they'd left, but there was no finer place than Brooklyn, no question. And I think Joe really captured that. So in some ways, you have to say it's the setting in a novel. Setting is one with everything that goes on in the novel. It's not a travelogue. We're not armchair travelers when we pick up a novel. The setting is one with character, is one with story. And over all that, it's one with meaning. Why are you making this up in the first place? If I wanted to really know what it's like in Nigeria, I'll go read a book about Nigeria. But to know these characters in this time and place, in this situation, makes me know much more than the subject of the novel. It's a tricky distinction. People who were trying to sell our books have a hard time making it because they want to sell our books by saying, oh, this is a book about. And you can't say this is a book about the human condition. This is a book about our mortality and sell any books. So you have to say this is about Boko Haram. This is about cricket in New York.
That's a very interesting point. I write a huge amount of literary criticism, history, and then reports into my system back home on whatever it might be, wherever I am at the moment. I'm writing a lot about the coming election and so on, and trying to analyze that, but that will only appear in 30 years time when the archives are finally open and I'm long gone. But I'm curious, and I'm sure people on the call are curious as well, if they're interested in novels and writing. It's I could imagine writing a novel, because I can write. I'm a good writer. But what I can't imagine myself doing is getting the idea for the novel into my head. If I got the idea in my head, I'd be able to write it, I'm sure. So can I ask both of you, actually, how does that work? Because I think non-novelists would be keen to know, does the idea of the novel come into your head, in a kind of a one massive sort of hit, or does it grow or whatever? How do you start a novel? How do you, when you sit down with the blank page on page one, what is the inspiration that has kind of created? What is there in your head before you sit down to fill that first blank page with your words? And I'm going to ask both of you that. So I'm going to ask you first, Alice, and then I'll ask Joseph, okay?
practically speaking, it's different every time. But sometimes it's a character. Sometimes it's an image. But I think the thing that, at least for me, is consistent is a sense of not knowing the idea, not having if I've got a great idea for a novel or even just a great story, it's a lot easier to just call someone up and tell them the story and enjoy it, or have a drink and tell the story. What makes a novel has to have some mystery in it to me. Sort of to borrow a cliched metaphor from another art, starting a novel is just having a big block of marble. And somehow you intuit, that's probably the strongest word, you intuit that there's a shape in there. And if you can just get to that shape through chiseling with sentences, you may find something whole and authentic and beautiful. You might not, but that's the challenge. I think it's in there. So sometimes it's just a character. I think there's a story in that character or an image. I think there's a novel in that, but I won't know until I start working at the words.
Joseph, how would you answer that question, if I may put it to you as well?
You know, I do often have an initial concept, but it's very broad. Like for my last novel, I was thinking Dubai. I was just very interested in Dubai. And what you quickly discover is that your conceptual kind of trigger doesn't actually get you very far. You're just sort of stuck again with the question of, you know, who are my characters? You know, what's the voice for this novel? Who do they meet? What happens? What's this novel actually about? And you only sort of come to terms. What I tend to do is I sort of tend to write something, and then I look at what I've written, and I think that what I've written will tell me what I'm supposed to be preoccupied with, because the act of writing, the whole point of writing, I suspect, is to inaugurate this kind of knowledge that you don't have, that isn't available at the conceptual stage. It's to sort of say, well, I know, because I mean, if I knew something about the world, and then I'm saying, I don't start from this starting point of knowledge. Oh, I know something about the world and I'm going to write a novel about it. On the contrary, I'm usually confused about something and find it kind of useful to sort of go into that sort of opacity, that darkness and that sort of ignorance, and try and make something. But different novelists have very different ways of proceeding, of course. I suspect that Alice is not too far away from me in how she proceeds. I can tell that because of her sentences as well. Some novelists will have everything planned out and will also write a novel a year. Now, I don't know how I could do that. And I don't think Alice could write a novel a year because we have a more dreamy, even if our dreams ultimately settle, not Alice's, even if my dreams ultimately settle into rather familiar sort of shapes. So the starting, starting isn't the issue. It's the 7 years after you've started, in my case.
The marathon rather than a sprint then, yes.
Yeah, and the other thing about a novel is that it's sort of, you know, it's pretty sort of contingent on your life. I mean, the thing about a novel, I find that I can only really make progress on a novel if I'm preoccupied with it, which is to say, I wake up in the morning and before I'm occupied with the questions of family or questions of the world, I'm actually thinking about my novel. My head is there, and it's quite difficult to sustain or arrive at that moment of preoccupation in my case. I mean, I would readily watch, you know, cricket or football or do something else or sort of, you know, all the 101 distractions. It's not like I've got a study where I go as a novelist and I have a do not disturb sign and I'm sort of, you know, where my sort of pipe, get my pipe out and do my work as a novelist. You know, what I do as a novelist is the leftovers from the rest of my life, unfortunately.
And what can I ask you as well about your craft, the way you kind of approach your craft of writing? Are you a kind of a constant reviser of your work, or can you sort of produce stuff in large quantities on a daily basis that you don't need to go back to again because you've kind of got it first time? But what kind of approach do you take to revising the work that you put on paper initially?
Well, no, I'm not a draft producer. I try and write everything. I write very slowly, and I'm interested in perfecting the sentences I'm writing. And of course, the next day I realize that they're not perfected at all. So that's how I work. And I'm actually interested in that relationship with language. You know, when you get further on in a book and everything is suddenly steaming along and you've solved kind of some of it, and you know what has to be in the book, whether you like it or not, the book has its own logic. Mm-hmm. And you know, well, I've got to have a scene in which this happens. Then you can make progress more quickly, and you in that instance you have to be slightly careful about not writing functionally. You have to still open yourself up to surprising yourself, because mm-hmm. if you surprise yourself, then you know that will, that's your reader will certainly be surprised, and I think surprise is a very on a sentence to sentence level, surprise is very kind of precious.
I was going to ask you the same question about your methodology when it comes to getting that initial idea into the stage where it's a finalized book that you can send off to your publisher.
I think I agree with Joseph, and I think we probably have much in common in the way we approach writing novels, and not necessarily the only way a novel gets written. But there is that careful crafting of sentences. I don't want to say I'm a believer, but I have discovered that there's an awful lot of either the unconscious or the subconscious that will find its way into a novel if the writer is paying very careful attention to the language itself. So by working carefully sentence by sentence, I think what you do is you begin to draw up things that you didn't know your story was going to be about, ideas that you didn't quite understand and have only come to understand because of the working at words. So for me, it's that getting the sentences right, which also involves sometimes just slapping them down, just pushing the story forward. There are days when it's just, this is going to be bad. Just keep writing. You can throw it out tomorrow, but just keep writing. One of the hardest things to teach young writers to do, especially someone who's started out on a first novel, is to reread what they've already written. There's this impulse to say, I finished the first 100 pages of my novel, so now I just have to add another 150 pages and it'll be big enough to call a novel. But there's that process of each time you add something, a new character arrives, a new scene arrives, that has the potential for changing everything that's come before. So it's this constant, just in the initial stages, it's the getting the voice right, as Joe said, getting the language right, crafting a sentence, but then allowing the sentences to teach you to take the character or the novel someplace you hadn't planned on it going. And then there are those days when you just sort of have to just push the rock up the hill and just get it down, and hope that at some point in the process, you'll get it right.
Yeah. Joseph, looking at the backgrounds of yourself and Alice and comparing them, I mean, Alice's is, you know, I think grandparents from Ireland, parents, first generation Americans, and Alice, a second generation American. In your case, your background is more varied. It's, you've got an Irish father, Turkish mother. You've lived in various countries and so on. I know you've settled in New York, and I can see from you and from your writing that you're very definitely now a kind of a very kind of committed New Yorker, and you contribute to public debate here. You know, you write essays in some of the major publications here, not about literature necessarily, but sometimes about about the political world around us, and it's very it's a very interesting world at the moment, shall we say, without making any kind of comments that will get me into trouble. But I mean, could you imagine yourself going back and mining some of that stuff that you picked up during your childhood, you know, being sort of Turkish and Irish, and could you imagine yourself delving back into that world and writing a novel about with a Turkish theme or an Irish theme at some point?
Well, I mean, I wrote a nonfiction book about my grandfathers, one Turkish, one Irish. Yeah. And that sort of goes very deep into Ireland, and it goes very deep into Turkey. Actually, not that deeply into Turkey, because Turkey is very, very difficult. Even though I go there every year, it's a very difficult country to penetrate for me, partly because of the language issues. So I feel like I've done a significant amount of stuff with the Irish material that I do have, but I sort of feel like I have a kind of very deracinated imagination and as a kind of emotion. I mean, I'm very much a big. See, the thing is, I know I'm Irish because I support all the Irish sports teams. And so whenever, You know, and so whenever anybody in a green shirt runs on out to a field, I'm sort of there in the middle of the night watching it. So I have a kind of basic national, but whether or not that translates into, into kind of my work, my writing is another issue. And I also feel like, strangely enough, you know, as you say, you know, in the old days, certainly when you and I were growing up, Irish writing had this kind of notoriety, and that notoriety was connected with, you know, the political violence, with the kind of the Catholic Church, with a certain national drama which had been made famous by Yeats and by Joyce, and to a certain extent by all these other great writers we've had from Ireland. So there was a kind of, you know, the conversations you and I would be having in Ireland in the 1990s or 80s would be very different from the ones they're having now. And we now have a brand new generation of Irish writers who are amazing and are, I would say, very kind of artistically kind of adventurous. But they're not specifically writing about the stuff that Seamus Heaney would write about. You know, I mean, you know, Seamus Heaney belonged to that era, yeah, which I belong to, which yeah, is an era in which certain things are preoccupy you. But,
and I often wonder, Ireland, Irish writers earned 4 Nobel Prizes for literature in the 20th century. And a lot of that was certainly connected with the fact that there was something happening in Ireland that was pretty spectacular in terms of the political transformations. And that's probably why Yeats ended up getting the Nobel Prize, because he had kind of interrogated all of that stuff that was happening in Ireland through the public poems that he wrote in the 20th century, and then got the Nobel Prize the year after Ireland became independent. And I often wonder, you know, is there a sufficient narrative backdrop today for Irish writers to kind of give them that lift in the kind of view of the world or what? But that's a question for another time. Could I ask about a little bit, both of you, about language? I mean, do you, Joseph, as you obviously, your mother spoke Turkish, and you probably have some.
Actually, my mother spoke French.
She spoke French, okay. But anyway, but you.
I'm Turkish too, but French was the language of the house. It's very strange.
Yeah, you grew up in a multilingual environment. You had parents from different linguistic traditions. And Alice, you grew up in a very maybe a more homogenous kind of environment with people that maybe had. I'm sure a lot of your parents' friends were also Irish immigrants and so on, first generation Irish. How has your respective experiences shaped the way you write, do you think, Joseph? And do you think your background...
I don't think it's a coincidence, but my literary awakening, as it were, my first inkling that there was something about language that was special, that it inaugurated its own kind of knowledge, came through reading Joyce. Yeah. And I was hugely... I loved Samuel Beckett growing up. And I read all of it, and I read Heaney a lot, and I read Derek Mann, who just died. Mm-hmm. There were all sorts of, so I was very much an Irish reader. And at that time, I think as a teenager, as a kind of expat teenager, I did identify in this kind of, in the way that teenagers do, you know, teenagers need a sense of identity, maybe more than I would now, with Ireland and Irish writing. And I was kind of, you know, very interested in Ireland and Irish culture. And of course, specifically, I mean, Irish writers those writers, Yeats as well, were very much concerned with linguistic effects. They weren't necessarily, even Joyce, who obviously is a great anthropologist of Dublin, is doing so almost as an excuse to produce these extraordinary sentences and verbal innovations. And so that was and I wrote poetry. That was my first thing. I don't know what Alice started writing, but I didn't write any prose until I was 24 when I started my first novel. I didn't write a short story. And but I was writing poems, and that they sort of dried up, and I thought, well, what the hell, I'll try and write a novel. Mm-hmm. But my first novel was poetry, and I think that is an Irish thing, because poets are still known in Ireland. People know who the poets are. They respect them, and there's no way that anybody in the United States has the stature of a Seamus Heaney, or even, you know, Derek Mann or Michael Longley or Paul Muldoon, all of our poets, they don't have that here. And but I was Irish in the sense that I took writing seriously, and I wasn't very self-conscious about it. I thought it was a pretty kind of regular thing to do.
Alice, do you think your background, with all the sort of influences around you, which may have been, you know, more homogenous than Joseph's were, do you think that shaped the way you write, the way you kind of chisel your way through the language and get the words in the right order and you know, the vocabulary you use and the way you write? Do you think that's affected by the background that you have of growing up in an Irish American household?
Oh, I think so. And this is when I have to bring in the other adjective, Irish Catholic American. Yeah. Household. The only other language in my household and in my neighborhood was Latin at the Mass. And, you know, I remembering I wasn't allowed to be an altar boy because only boys were altar boys. But when both my older brothers were studying the Latin Mass, I studied it too. And I loved it. I loved the language. And I think, you know, prayer was my first poetry. The Catholic prayers was poetry to me. There was a lot of language in my family, a lot, you know, my father came up through the New York public school system when you had to memorize poetry, and he loved to show us that he remembered his Whitman and his Shakespeare. And he sang a lot of Irish songs that he had heard from his aunt that were all stories. So language was there, but it was the rhythm and the repetition of Catholic prayer and the Catholic Mass, I think, that shaped the way I shape sentences as much as anything else. Brooklynese or New York slang or even Shakespeare and Yeats. I think it was the language of Rome.
Yeah, obviously James Joyce had the same idea, because if you look at the first episode of Ulysses, there's lots of Latin there through the
No getting away from it.
Yeah, I've been delighted really here to have a chance to talk in this way with Joseph and Alice. They're both absolutely fine, brilliant writers, and they are very actually alike. I think we discovered that tonight, that they have a lot of things in common. You know, they may have different backgrounds, but there's a certain kind of, you know, their approach to writing seems to me to be very similar. And that's, you know, that's fascinating. But we learned, I think those of us who only admire creative writers and are in awe of them, I think have learned a lot tonight from Alice and Joseph about writing and where it comes from and how it operates and where it goes. And I thank them both for that. And I thank the audience for hanging along with us and staying with us throughout this session. I know that the audience will have enjoyed this. I know that because I enjoyed it. And if I enjoyed it, I think others will have enjoyed it too. So thank you very much for that. And thank you to the Writers Museum for hosting this. Thank you to the Consulate for being a partner of the museum in this regard. And thank you in particular to Alice and to Joseph for their contributions this evening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, historian and anthropologist Claudio Lomnitz discusses his new memoir, Nuestra America, My Family, in the Vertigo of Translation. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.